This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. So you've packed your bags and you've booked your flight and hotel. You are coming to Rome on pilgrimage for the Jubilee Year of Mercy. If you haven't done so yet, you might want to consider bringing along a companion who knows Rome and the Vatican like the back of her hand. It's Joan Lewis, a 3-decade-long Rome resident and veteran Vatican watcher. She's the Joan in Joan Knows, Vatican Radio's weekly program looking at the Pope's activities and Vatican events. Joan is also the Rome Bureau Chief for EWTN, the prominent U.S.-based Catholic radio and television. Her new book, A Holy Year in Rome, The Complete Pilgrim's Guide for the Jubilee of Mercy, promises a lot, and it delivers. Joan sat down with me and told me what she hoped to achieve in writing this guide for pilgrims to Rome in this very special year. This is really a treat for me to have you in studio to talk about your book. We're talking today about A Holy Year in Rome, The Complete Pilgrim's Guide for the Jubilee of Mercy. Joan, this is really a treat. We've had you in, you know, almost every week for I don't know how many years now to talk about what the Pope is doing in the Vatican. And you are really one of the Rome experts, and I'm so happy to see this book coming out.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. As you say, it's actually been more than 15 years just before the last Jubilee that I started my collaboration with Vatican Radio. But part of a great deal, obviously, of what is in this book is information I've gleaned from my years of work here, from living in Rome, visiting the 7 pilgrim basilicas that I write about in that book, having gone to Casa Gandolfo, strolled through Vatican City, a lot of the places I just try and bring people to. It's the result of living here and working here, for sure.
You also take a look at some of the history of the Jubilee, how it came about, some of the past Jubilees. But why did Pope Francis establish this unscheduled Jubilee of Mercy?
It's not the first extraordinary Jubilee that we've had in the history of Jubilees, but which, by the way, did begin in the year 1300. Pope Francis, from his very first public appearance, really, mercy was his vocabulary. It is the focus of his being, as it was, but we didn't know it, before he came to Rome and was elected Pope. And in his work with prisoners, in his work with disabled and so forth in Buenos Aires as the Cardinal Archbishop, that was such a focus of his ministry. And then when he came to Rome, the first Sunday after he was elected on a Wednesday, and the first Sunday that he had Mass, followed, of course, by the Angelus, it was all both times that he spoke was focused on mercy. And I think he's aware of the fact he's made us a lot more aware of mercy, what it is, how we can show it, live it, and so forth. But I think he just wanted to bring it to the attention of the whole world, not just people who came to Rome, because that is one of the important points about this Jubilee. Every single diocese in the world has at least one holy door, maybe on the cathedral. They may have two or three if the diocese is home to a world-famous or a shrine in their city that is famous, or Mexico, where the Pope just visited, obviously. So there are holy doors and an occasion to obviously accrue graces if you live this holier correctly, whether you come to Rome, the Eternal City, or whether you live it in your diocese. And he wanted to make a holy year accessible to so many people, which if you look at the history of holy years, Rome was always the focus. And pilgrims may have come to Rome and then gone to the Holy Land or even Santiago for St. James, Santiago de Compostela. But it was like, okay, everything had to be done in Rome. This is where you would get the special graces. And this way he's extended it to the whole world. And anybody who isn't aware of Pope Francis and mercy has been obviously in outer space.
Well, you know, you mentioned the holy doors in various dioceses around the world. You know, what comes to mind is there is a holy door which was opened down in Lampedusa in southern Italy, where, of course, hundreds of migrants, mostly from the war in Syria, Northern Africa, Iraq. They're coming over every day.
Right.
And, of course, this issue of migrants is uppermost on Pope Francis'
mind. And that too.
In this year of mercy.
I believe the first trip he made as Pope was to Lampedusa, if I'm not mistaken. It was in July after his election on March 13th, 2013. So he's greatly aware of that. And if there's a place we can obviously show mercy, it would be not only to, as I mentioned, the disabled, maybe to prisoners, but certainly to the refugees. And then actually the first Holy Door of this year was opened before the one at St. Peter's even, when the Pope was in Africa, in Bangui, and he opened a Holy Door there for the not just that diocese, but symbolically for the whole world, because then the real formal ceremony. But I guess I can't. I was going to say it was here in Rome, but it wasn't. It really was in Africa, wasn't it? The first formal ceremony. So Holy Doors are a big thing. There's, of the seven pilgrim basilicas, it's the four major papal basilicas that have the Holy Doors here
in
Rome.
And in your book, you do take a look at those.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about them. What can pilgrims expect to find when they come here?
I think when you go through most pilgrims, if they're on an organized tour, their leader has, thank the Lord, always explained the meaning of and the history of, for example, St. Mary Major Basilica and the history of St. Paul Outside the Walls, St. John Lateran, which is also the Pope's Cathedral Church as Bishop of Rome, and then obviously St. Peter's. Wherever they start, most do start at St. Peter's. Wherever they start, that particular door has a wonderful history. Oh, well, for example, the one, St. Peter's blocks from where we are sitting right now, the Holy Door on St. Peter's, the current one, because there were previous Holy Doors, the current Holy Door was offered by Swiss Catholics for the 1950 Holy Year. And so it was actually opened on Christmas Eve of 1949, and consisting of, I think it's, if I remember correctly, 12 panels. Each panel has a different story to it. Each Holy Door on these four papal basilicas in Rome has its own particular story, too. And they're beautiful doors. The only thing is, in most instances, you don't get the chance as you're walking through to stand there and ponder, study the door. And remember, these are doors that will always be seen from the outside, even when they're closed at the end of this Holy Year. So you can go back someday, study them. Maybe you took pictures, probably not, because you're kind of hurried through. You keep the movement going is what the personnel tell you at the basilicas. But they each have their own magnificent story, some deeply rooted in history, longer, older than, for example, the history of the St. Peter's door. So, but they're beautiful works of art themselves. And then, of course, on the day that they're closed, the inner part of the door, the part that is inside the basilica, will then be sealed up. And usually the bricks that seal up this door, sometimes then plastered over, something is put on the back of the door till the next time it's open. But sometimes they have coins and other interesting things that are bricked up in that wall. And then, because normally a regular Holy Year occurs every 25 years. So the next regular, normal, ordinary Holy Year will be 2025.
We can't presume that everybody listening to this program knows why do they have to go through a Holy Door? And what, for example, there's something called an indulgence,
right,
which sounds like a very foreign word to many people. What is the link between these things?
Well, first of all, the Holy Door, and why is it called a Holy Door? You are entering physically a door into a church, into what people hope will be each person hopes, the person who called the Jubilee, hopes will be a very holy period for you, a period of penance and almost a Lenten type of celebration. And so you're physically entering a building, but then there's also the symbolism of entering into a new spiritual period in your life. And also they're called Holy Doors because the doors themselves, all the materials used to make the door, plus the hammers and so forth that are used to open a door, they just knock. It's not a hammer like a person would use with great strength on building a house or something. But anyway, all the materials used are blessed, so they're holy in that respect too. But the indulgence, for example, going through the holy doors of all the four papal basilicas in Rome, an indulgence granted for a special occasion such as a holy door means that you get a remission from the temporal punishment due to sin under the following conditions. In this case, holy year, four doors. We're talking about you must go through four doors. And then you have to have, within a period of 8 days, there should be mass, sacramental confession, the reception of the Eucharist, and then a prayer for the intention of the Holy Father. So those are men, and they're always laid out when they're printed out or put on like the Vatican website or a diocesan website. The conditions are always laid out, how you gain that indulgence. And the popes have granted indulgences for a number of events, very often during a World Youth Day, an indulgence is granted. So, this Holy Year of Mercy, which we were speaking about in the beginning, why did the Pope call it? And if you look at the calendar, and I do have the calendar of events in the book, if you look at the calendar, you will see how many events are linked to mercy. The Jubilee of Prisoners, we had Ash Wednesday, the mandate to over 1,100, almost 1,200 missionaries of mercy from dioceses around the world, priests who will hear confession. These are priests who have been named by their bishop because they are known to be perhaps a great deal like or similar to Padre Pio, in Saint Padre Pio, in the sense of their great love of the sacrament and time devoted to the sacrament of penance. And the Pope sent these people out, giving them an extra special privilege this year too, not just hearing confession, but they have the authority to absolve from sins normally only the Holy See can absolve from. One, excommunication, for example. And there's, I think, eight categories that by which a person could be excommunicated. I think the most well-known would probably be relative to the sin of abortion. A lot of the four, I think it is, of the sins that can lead to excommunication actually involve priests. For example, revealing what you heard in confession, breaking the seal of confession, or anyone who desecrates a consecrated host, and so forth. So anyway, the Holy Father gave this privilege to priests. Now, this is not unique. A lot of people, when they first read the news that these missionaries of mercy could now absolve from sins normally reserved to the Holy See, a lot of priests went, oh, well, wait a minute, no, that happens in my country. And it is true. If a priest anywhere, and I know this has happened in the United States, if a priest anywhere asks his bishop for the authority, for example, to absolve from excommunication, a person who comes in and said, I had an abortion and I'm heartily sorry, etc. Priests have been given that function, so this is not the first time in the in the history of the church. It may be the first time for some of these priests, but not in church history. So it's an important part of the Jubilee.
Now, in your book, you also look at Castel Gandolfo, which is, of course, the summer, well, in the past, it's been known as the summer papal residence. However, Pope Francis has sort of eschewed that, that title, preferring the Vatican, because he seems to be working in the summer here in the Vatican.
He has said himself in answer to questions and interviews that he just really doesn't know how to take a vacation. He's so used to working.
But it doesn't mean he can't.
No, that's right.
Yeah. It's a bit of a disappointment for the people of Castel Gandolfo,
which,
of course, for people who don't know, it is a lakeside village up in the hills outside of Rome. It's about 40 minutes from downtown Rome. And it is spectacular. You've been there,
I think, several times. The grounds are gorgeous. Actually, territory-wise, it is bigger than Vatican City that we are just, a couple blocks from, the Vatican City State. That's also a Vatican, but not Vatican City in Rome. And lush, beautiful gardens, a palace, which is buildings which actually house also two of the famous Vatican telescopes, the ones that do the real astronomical work. today are in Tucson, Arizona. But wonderful building. And I do remember John Paul and Benedict said that what they liked about it, and Saverio Petrillo, who for years, 55 years, I think, was master of the papal villas out there. Everybody always said it's so much more homey to be there. Yeah, it's a beautiful building, but it's a lot smaller than the buildings, obviously, in Vatican City here. And you just do kind of feel like you're in your country home. Many of the rooms overlook the lake. It's a beautiful little town.
It's very quiet, too. And also you've got the farm. There's a Vatican farm.
And that's about a third of the, maybe just over a third of the property. This is a farm that makes, they have their own olive oil. They have their butter, their milk, their yogurt. And there's a shipment delivered of many of these products every morning, about 6, to the Vatican here in Rome. But all these fresh things put on the Pope's table. And it's so funny because there wouldn't be any reason why Pope Francis couldn't work there. And I think anybody listening to this program, and you and I probably have our own stories of those of us who work, even if you have a family, you're a working mother with your family, just a break of one night and 2 days, 2 days and 2 nights out of town at a different locale, it makes you appreciate all of your normal circumstances just that much more. It just refreshes you body and soul. A small period like 2 days. Imagine being in the beauty of Castel Gandolfo. And actually, the reason I wrote about it, I probably wouldn't have if people couldn't go there, because why give them an hors d'oeuvre and then they can't have the meal? But there are trips now, and it's in my book, How to Do It, and it's also on the site, the Vatican website, vatican.va. Go to the section on the Vatican Museums, and you will find information on these tours. Because now there's tours whereby you have the shortest visit, but like an hour and a half, of the Vatican Museums. You're then brought into the Vatican Gardens, which is a joy in itself. Then you walk your way over to the train station and take a train out to Castel Gandolfo, and there buses, minibuses, bring you up to the palace and to the gardens. It's just a delightful experience, and so that's why I wrote about it, and that's why I wrote about Vatican City, because people can visit it. And delightfully, you and I know, we've strolled through the gardens and the beautiful Casina Pio Quarto, and just the history of the buildings, the fountains, the gardens. And the gardens are two different styles. There's a very formal, beautifully taken care of, sculpted gardens. And then there's gardens where it's like, wow, I don't think a gardener's been here in 20 years. the very informal, and they're allowed to be that way. That's what they are. So,
but in your book, you give tips and pointers on how to, you know, for example, go visit the Scavi under St. Peter's Basilica, where St. Peter is believed to be buried. You give some ideas on visiting the Vatican Museums, how to book tickets to the audience, that sort of thing. So a very useful guidebook.
What I did in that particular section, the tips for tourists, I have kind of actually two sections on tips, but I took the actual official page from VaticanState.va with all the information, the telephone numbers, the emails, etc. And then I just added my own tip from Joan. Mm-hmm. You know, here's a shortcut, or here's a better way, or don't think of getting into St. Peter's Basilica unless your shoulders and knees are covered. And that's men and women. So the useful things, why come all the way to Rome and then you can't get in the basilica because you're not dressed correctly, you know. So I even do give the names of the all the embassy names, addresses, phone numbers of all the embassies of English-speaking, you know. So, I mean, the United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Great Britain, et cetera. So
now, speaking of the English-speaking community and the embassies here, you do also talk about your own American parish here in Rome. It's a
Church of Santa Susanna.
Parish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since January of 1922, the church has been entrusted to the Paulist Fathers, and the church itself is owned by the Cistercian Order, and there is a small group of nuns that live they're cloistered, so they live in a grated area, if you will, behind the actual church itself. And so, gosh, I've been a member of Santa Susanna, I think, almost all my 30-some years in Rome. They have wonderful masses, and I know Pope John Paul said mass there. We have three masses on weekends, and right now, because of some restoration being done on the church, the physical building is closed, so masses are elsewhere, and I believe I give that in the book. But I know that when John Paul said mass, the church had been closed for a few years again for restoration, a 500-year-old ceiling about to collapse or something. So closed for several years, and he came and celebrated mass, and he was telling the Cistercian nuns how valuable the ministry of the Paulist is. He said their main charism is bringing people back into the church who may have fallen away. Mm. So it's a very active parish. People live all over. They live out in the Castelli Romani, like near Ariccia, where the Pope, you know, goes for retreat.
We've got some of your fans listening to this program. Where can they perhaps see you on a Sunday morning mass with the Paulist Fathers?
Paulist Fathers. It would be, I usually help out on Saturdays. Our mass now, at 5:45, is in a chapel at Santa Maria degli Angeli, that beautiful big basilica on Piazza Repubblica. And if not, it would be a Sunday morning 10 o'clock mass at San Camillo, Camillo di Lellis, a very beautiful church. And so that's where chances are I will be a lector. And how many people have come up to me because they know my voice? Well, it's funny. I mean, I've lived with this voice all my life. It's nothing special.
Nothing
to
new.
Me.
Nothing new.
But, yeah, exactly. So they recognize it from radio and TV. And then anybody in Rome wanting to get the book, it is available at the Vatican Bookstore and at the Pauline Multimedia. Other stores are beginning to pick it up, but those are the two that have it now.
Can people order it on Amazon or online somewhere?
I think Amazon. I know Amazon.com had it. I can't speak at this moment, and I should be able to, of Amazon.the UK. Sophia Institute Press is they're the publishers, and you go online to them. And I was kind of honored at the Amazon had a pre-order for the book, and then we went to order when, of course, they were all printed. And Amazon ran out, and they had to order more books. So that's always a good sign for
always
a book.
Always good news.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But what I try to do in the book, people tell me I've achieved it, is it's as if you and I are walking through the Vatican Gardens, through a holy door, into some other church in Rome, because I do look. There's a chapter called "In If You Have Time," and very short looks at other magnificent churches in Rome. But it's as if I'm physically walking with you, and we're talking. And I want to be your friend. And people said, people write me, not even knowing this was my intention, "Oh, Joan, it's just like being with you at St. Peter's or whatever." So I have achieved that, you know.
Well, congratulations, yeah. Joan. It's a real treat, like I said in the beginning, to see you here at the radio and to be able to talk about this book that you've put a lot of heart and experience
and passion
into. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you for doing it. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. And a warm thanks there to Joan Lewis, EWTN's Rome Bureau Chief and co-host of Joan Knows on Vatican Radio.